is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. We've had their partnership manager and training specialist, Jefferson Mason, and marketing manager, Nick Bartlett, on the show in the past, and we couldn't be more excited about what they're doing for the game of basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Beyond efficient reps, Dr. Dish provides training expertise and versatility designed to develop complete players. The new Dr. Dish CT machine has further revolutionized basketball training with over 150 plus on-demand individual and team workouts from some of the best coaches and trainers in the game. These workouts include video instruction and combine game-like shooting drills with ball handling, conditioning, and agility drills. Along with workouts, the Dr. Dish training management system also provides stat tracking and analytics to track progress and ensure accountability. These are just a few reasons why top programs like Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, Florida, Baylor, and countless others are upgrading to Dr. Dish. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. Follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And make sure you mention the Hoopheads podcast to get $300 off your next Dr. Dish purchase. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get out and get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Quinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are going to talk a little bit of NBA. But before we do, we need to talk about the passing of Kobe Bryant, Jay.
Yeah, I obviously, I mean, this was a big shocker. No one thought it was coming, but you know, what was crazy was, so I was sitting watching the golf tournament on Sunday. I was sitting there watching it and I'm just scrolling through Twitter because I've got my newborn in my arms. And she's just sitting there with my arms, obviously asleep. And I'm flipping through the Twitter and I see TMZ reporting Kobe Bryant's killed in a plane, helicopter crash. And I'm like, TMZ, like, how would they get that scoop, like, right off the gate? Like, no one else is reporting it. I'm not seeing anything. But all of a sudden, you could just see on Twitter, it caught on like wildfire. I mean, within 2 minutes, if you have a Twitter account and you didn't know, you obviously weren't looking at your phone. Because if you were on Twitter, everyone was tweeting about it. And it literally shut Twitter down. Like, I don't know if you know this, but it like literally shut the feeds down for everyone because it was just totally unbelievable. No one believed it. And then it started trickling in. And once Woj put it out there that it was confirmed, I think everyone, it really started to sink in even more that it was the case. And I was talking to a few friends and we couldn't come up with a time in our lives that like an athlete this young that we lost. Now, obviously, you know, I won't say Payne, like I feel bad, like Payne Stewart was a big name in golf, but nowhere near to the degree that Kobe Bryant impacted the game. So I can't think of anything that would be this earth shattering, at least to my core, as it comes to a one individual impacting some guy I didn't know. It's not like a cataclysmic event, but it's just bizarre. And I don't know. I tried to explain to my wife because like she doesn't get it because she doesn't watch basketball. She didn't quite understand why. Like I was explaining to her, like, well, he's just been one of the greatest players of all time, and no one expected him, and he's just kind of trying to explain it to her, and I think she kind of got it at the end. But it was just, I've never felt so weird after something's happened, and I still, like, this morning woke up and was like, is this true? Is Kobe really dead? Like, I didn't believe it.
Yeah, I guess the first thing is it is completely surreal when we lose somebody who is so young and such a magnetic personality. No matter what you thought of him as a player or his playing style, he was clearly a magnetic personality. And the fact that he was still being seen, especially now with his daughter and then his daughter being with him as part of this whole thing, is just makes it even more tragic, along with the other families that were impacted by this. And, you know, you were talking there about just how the impact that it had on you and not being able to necessarily think of anything that you could equate it to in your lifetime. So I'm going to just share my story of how I found out, and then I'll kind of piggyback on that last thought. So I was at the gym with my son, working on some basketball skills, and a friend of ours, Coach Herm, was at the gym, and my son and I are on one basket, and Coach Herm's down at another basket, and he yells over to me, "Hey, Mike, Kobe Bryant died in a helicopter crash this morning." And of course, my first reaction is, "Get out of here! You know, get out of here, man! You're just, you know, you're making stuff up."
And if you know Coach Herb, that was a valid response, Mike.
Correct. It seemed like it may not have been the truth. So I go, "Are you sure?" And he's like, "Yeah, it's being reported by TMZ." And so, of course, my reaction to that was the same one that you had, which is TMZ and nobody else is reporting it. It seems like it could be a little shady. And obviously, at that point, you're hoping that the information is wrong. So as soon as he said that, I walked over to my phone, just like you did, found it on TMZ, but went to the ESPN cover page, nothing there, went on Twitter, nothing there except for TMZ. And then there was another guy and his son in the gym as well. And about 3 minutes after I put down the phone, that guy came over and said, "It's being reported now by Woj on ESPN that, in fact, Kobe was on that helicopter and that he's passed away." And I went back to my phone, took a look at the ESPN cover page, took a look at Twitter for maybe, I don't know, I might have looked at it for 30 seconds, and then just put the phone down. And quite honestly, you're stunned. I mean, it's just is one of those things where, you know, with an older person, you expect that to happen. Any type of car accident, plane crash, you just can't really wrap your head around it that someone that young is gone in an instant, that they wake up one day and everything's normal and you get on this helicopter ride to go to a travel basketball game and suddenly you're gone. And for me, it brought back two memories of two things that have happened in my lifetime where I know exactly where I was when they happened, and they were, I would say, equally, at least at the time, equally as stunning to me. And so I'll share those two things, and I think it'll provide maybe a little bit of context, at least for me, as I'm talking this through. So the first one, and this was probably before your time, was when Len Bias was drafted by the Celtics.
Well, that was 86, right?
Correct.
And that was before my time because I was born in October of 86.
Correct. So you would not have any recollection of that on a firsthand basis.
I've heard the story many times, obviously, but yeah.
Absolutely. And Brad Daugherty was the number one pick of the Cavs, and then Len Bias went number two to the Celtics. And that night he was with a friend and unfortunately ended up using cocaine and overdosed, and it killed him. And at that time, the internet wasn't there at all. And I was actually at basketball camp at Baldwin Wallace team camp the next morning. And Mark West, who played for the Cleveland Cavaliers at that time, was a guest speaker at the camp. And so me and I don't know how many kids were there, 150, 200 kids, were sitting around on the court listening to Mark West give a speech. And at some point during the speech, somebody came to him and told him, whispered in his ear, that Len Bias had died. And then he shared that with the entire camp. And I'll just never forget, you're just sitting there and you hear that news. And again, there it was a collective experience because it wasn't just you hearing it as one person. It was this whole group hearing it at the same time. And Mark West had just heard it too. So he was very emotional, not having known Len Bias personally, but I had watched him in college for a long time, and there was every indication that he was going to be one of the greatest players in the game just from all the things that he had done as a college player and his athleticism. And I'll never forget that moment when I found out that he had died. And that was very similar to the experience that I had with Kobe. And then the other experience that is along these same lines is when Magic announced that he had HIV. And I had just come home from practice at Kent State. We had just gotten done, came into my apartment, TV went on to SportsCenter, and there was Magic on TV making the announcement that he was retiring as a result of having HIV. And at that point, much different outlook for someone who had HIV in 1991 than there is for somebody who has HIV in the year 2020. And everybody at that point thought that it was a death sentence for Magic. And Magic, just like Kobe, was somebody that had a magnetic personality. And probably Magic wasn't as polarizing maybe as Kobe was, but no matter what, Magic just seemed like so alive that it was hard to imagine that. I mean, at that point, people thought this guy's going to be dead in, you know, 2 or 3 years. And yep. So to hear him say that and make that announcement, it was just, I just remember it being crushing. And that probably, honestly, of the three, I think that Magic announcement probably was more crushing than anything. One, because I was a fan of Magic, a huge fan of Magic. Not that I wasn't a fan of Kobe, but I don't think I ever fully embraced.
You weren't a Kobe stan, Mike.
Kobe, right. Kobe wasn't necessarily ever my favorite player. Whereas I think growing up, I didn't like the Celtics and Larry Bird. I really liked Magic and always rooted for the Lakers against the Celtics. So I had that just connection as a fan to Magic more so than I did even with Kobe. And certainly Lenny Bias hadn't been in my life for as long as Magic had when he made that announcement. It's just, again, I remember being almost numb when Magic made that announcement. Like, I can't believe this guy is going to be dead in 2 or 3 yeah. years. And the fact that he's still here in the year 2020, when I think back to how I felt in that immediate moment and how almost everybody felt in that immediate moment, it's a tremendous victory for humanity that we've been able to figure that out and not have HIV be a death sentence for people. And so those are the other two, again, the Lenny Bias death and the Magic Johnson HIV announcement, that those were two of the first things that came to my mind when I got the news about Kobe. Was like, wow, yeah, I'm never going to forget exactly where I was, and I'm never going to forget the exact feeling. And it's one of those things that, you said it very well, that you can't really wrap your head around it. You can't believe it's true. You keep looking for information that says it was a mistake or it was somebody else or it really didn't happen. And obviously you couldn't find that because it was him. It did happen. And it's all made all the more tragic by the fact that you had those other families, you had the young girls on the helicopter. You know, then there's some circumstances which at the time when we're recording, I haven't heard much about exactly what went on with the helicopter. And I'm sure that as the investigation goes on over the next several weeks, that we're going to find out more about that. I know there was the report that the LAPD had their helicopters on the ground because of the foggy conditions.
Pretty much everyone, I kind of was reading some stuff today. Pretty much everyone was grounded, Mike. Like, not just LAPD. There was basically nobody flying helicopters within, you know, I don't exactly know. They said 50-mile radius, especially around where the tragedy occurred. And the thing that, you know, I found bizarre is, how do they get, I don't exactly know, do you get clearance to fly, or can you?
I mean,
just
you would have
go?
To think so. I mean, they filed a flight plan, from what I understand and what I've read. So you would have to think that they're in contact with air traffic control, because there was a conversation that I read briefly back and forth between the helicopter pilot and air traffic control, basically, as the pilot, I guess, was saying that he was going to climb an altitude to try to get over whatever layer of clouds or fog that they were in right before they started to crash and descend. And so it seems like they would have had to get clearance from somebody or someone in an official capacity. And, you know, I don't know. It'll be interesting to hear as we move forward with the investigation as to whether there was a discussion of, should we take the helicopter today, or is it a bad idea, or was that something that, for whatever reason, didn't cross their radar? I don't know what the answer is, and neither does anybody else at this point, but I would guess that at some point those pieces of the puzzle are going to start to come together, and hopefully we'll at least have a better idea of what happened, what may have caused it, so that, again, if we're ever in this situation again with anyone else, that a situation like this can be avoided.
Yeah. So the one thing that, you know, when you were talking about, you remember where you were, this one's not a sports related one, But I remember I was only 10 years old at the time, I think. I remember where I was when I found out Princess Diana died. And I think, like, it's completely different. It's not, you know, a basketball person. And obviously, like, I don't have as much of a connection to Princess Diana other than the fact that my aunt and uncle live in England. I've been, at that point, I had probably been to England three times. So, like, I kind of have a little bit. But I do remember when she died, like, and finding out that it was a car crash. And then, obviously, the subsequent, oh, it was a paparazzi situation, blah, 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 blah. I remember finding out about that. And I remember where I was when I found out, because I know my aunt was really upset. Obviously, she's an English citizen, and my mom was pretty upset. And I remember that, but that would be the only thing that I can think of off the top of my head that I remember.
Yeah, I guess the other one for me is September 11th. I remember exactly where I was for that one. Clearly,
I was doing a fire drill. Strongsville High School. We were doing a fire drill. Yeah, I was in Mr. Barilli's math class, and we were walking outside. And it had to be really close, because I know the Pittsburgh airliner kind of flew over Cleveland.
Right. Like it turned around in the airspace, you know, here.
And I feel like this could just be misremembering, because, you know, those things kind of at this point are foggy. But I seem to recall a plane being overhead when we were outside, but I don't know that that was it. But it was just when we walked back inside finding out about it, I do remember that. But that would be under a cataclysmic thing. Like,
correct.
I remember where I remember I remember when we were tearing down Saddam's statue. I remember that stuff too. Like, I know exactly where I was when that was happening, because we were watching it in class. So, I can't think of anyone else, like, big name, like one single person. I don't know.
No, I think in our lifetime, as far as celebrities, I guess if you want to take it beyond the, you know, beyond the basketball court, you think about Michael Jackson or Prince dying. But when those two got, just for me personally,
was that a surprise?
I mean, no, well, not that it wasn't a surprise. I mean, clearly they're both way younger than you would anticipate someone passing away. But I guess I didn't take the news. I guess I didn't have as much of a connection.
Yep.
As, not that I don't like music from Michael Jackson or Prince, but it wasn't the same as it was with the three situations that I already mentioned. It didn't hit me the same way. Although I will say, when I hear for certain a Michael Jackson song, I just think that I can't believe he's gone. And then when you think of Michael Jackson, especially with a musician, there's somebody that could have continued to create. You just wonder what you missed out on, what he could have done or what he could have created had he continued to live.
Well, he was about to go on tour, right? Like, he literally was in the middle of preparing to go back on tour for the first time in a while, if I remember correctly, because that's why they made a movie about him prepping and all that stuff going on right after he died.
I got nothing on that, but...
Oh, sorry.
No, it's totally fine. I mean, again, like I said, I just didn't have as personal of a connection to that story, but when I do hear music from Michael Jackson, I do think that, wow, this guy, one, the music that he created is still relevant, and if it came out today, it would be just as popular. And you just think about all the things that you missed out on. And I think that's the case here when you think about Kobe or you think about Len Bias. You know, obviously Bias never got to have a pro career, so you wonder what that would have been like. And then with Kobe, he's such a unique individual in that he seemingly had so many other interests, which he didn't have while he was playing. Clearly, he was, part of his appeal as a basketball player was his maniacal focus on being the best that he possibly could be, to the exclusion of people, things, whatever, other interests. And then when he retired, he started to look at other things that he wanted to do with his life, whether that was making movies, whether that was creating, you know, his shows that he did, the Details show for ESPN, and the, you know, the Muse and all that stuff. And then just being a dad, seemed like he had really started to take off in terms of his devotion to his family and his children. And you just, again, you think about the people that he leaves behind, whether it's his wife and his other daughters. And again, it's just so tragic that one of his daughters died with him, and those other
families that were affected, and it's just a tragedy all around. But you wonder what was the next chapter for him? What was he going to do with the rest of his life? And the fact that that was taken away from not only from him, but from the greater world in general. And obviously we can see from the outpouring of emotion and the number of people that have been affected by it, you know, especially in the city of Los Angeles, you just see the amount of people that are showing up at murals and sort of these impromptu celebrations of Kobe's life. Clearly he impacted way more people than he could have ever done personally, just by the type of person and type of basketball player that people perceive him to be. Yeah,
I
mean, definitely.
And you have, I don't know if you saw, but I'm assuming you're not a Bachelor watcher, Mike. You're not a Bachelor watcher, right?
I am not a Bachelor watcher. I've never seen 1 second of The Bachelor.
Well, so last night's episode was in Cleveland. I don't know if you saw. I'm sure you heard that at least.
I saw that on the Ringer, I think, this morning accidentally.
Okay, so anyways, so at the end of the episode, like they had gone one of his dates, and I've never watched the show, and I only caught wind of it because it was on Twitter today. Like the end of this episode, they showed like I don't know if it was originally left in there or if they put it in there intentionally or what they did, but they were doing like that. I know you don't go to Cedar Point very often, but they're doing that basketball game where you can shoot and try to score as many as you can. And like, it's like a 3-point shootout.
Is that next to the Junior Gemini?
The Junior Gemini is no longer standing, Mike.
Oh, sorry.
No, but there is one in that general vicinity though.
All right.
So you're not far off.
Okay, good.
He shot it and the girl yelled Kobe and I don't know if they intentionally left that in there. I would assume that they did. Just kind of as a little homage to him. I don't necessarily know that it really means anything, but it was kind of funny and bizarre to see it on The Bachelor, the girl yelling Kobe. And the one would have to wonder, was that originally in the episode or did they put that in after he passed away? Like, did they add that to the cut right
correct, before?
Yeah. Because I don't necessarily know that they would have had that in there. Like, it literally was at the end credits. Wow. Like, it was a 2-second clip.
Interesting. And I think that goes to just, again, the impact that he had on the basketball world and then his influence that kind of penetrated into other areas of life. That Kobe's one of those basketball players that even if you were just a casual basketball fan, you are more than likely aware of Kobe Bryant. So you have the Magic, the Bird, the Jordan, LeBron, Kobe, names that even the casual basketball fan, and in a lot of cases maybe even people who aren't basketball fans, are at least aware of those names. And again, the fact that he's a one-name guy, you could say Kobe and everybody knows who you're talking about, his influence on the game. And I think we're seeing it too in the reactions of current NBA players, guys who looked up to him. And I guess from my perspective, like, I forget that Michael Jordan's been retired for as long as he has been. And
are we talking the first or the second time?
I'm talking about the second time. I mean, obviously the first time he goes out, he's at the peak of his powers. When he comes back with the Wizards, he's not nearly the player that he was before. And then when he finally retires there, but the current generation of players that we have in the league today, unless you're at the very, very tail end of your career, you grew up watching Kobe. You didn't grow up watching Jordan. And so I think he's probably, of any player that is retired currently, I think he probably has or had the biggest impact on the current crop of NBA players. And you can see that just in the reactions around the league and the guys that were understandably distraught on Sunday. And I know you had texted me saying it's a wonder and kind of a shock that they decided to play. I read a couple different things, and I don't know how much it played into any decision that the league made, but just that almost that playing was an homage to Kobe because he would have wanted guys to continue to compete. He wouldn't have wanted the games to stop for him. And now, again, I don't know how much of that is true or not true, or just people that we're writing that, we're speculating. But clearly he had a huge influence on today's players in terms of the quote Mamba mentality and what that all meant. And it's still, I look at pictures of him, and whether that's pictures of him while he was still playing or you see pictures of him just sitting with his daughter on courtside, or just, again, just a normal photo of him in street clothes, and you look and you're like, this guy, so young and so vibrant and gone. It's still hard to wrap your head around, and I don't know that you ever will. And it's kind of interesting. The other thing I've been thinking about today a little bit is, so when somebody dies that young, they're obviously forever captured in your mind. They don't age. So we're never going to see 75-year-old Kobe Bryant like we see 80-year-old Bill Russell. We're always going to remember Kobe as a player, and then in the short time that he's been retired, he's going to be forever young in our minds. And I've been trying to kind of wrap my head around that and what that, I'm not sure it means anything, but it's just something that I've been thinking about when you think of other people who have been famous that have died young, and therefore in our mind they never age. Whereas these other stars, yeah, we see them, we can think about them when they're young, but we can also still see as they age, we see them in their old age, and it, I think, changes our perception of them for whatever, good, better, worse, indifferent. I think there's a different feel to somebody as they get older, whether they mellow or we forget their greatness or we make them even greater than they were. But with somebody who dies young, you're always going to remember them in that younger stage of their life. And it's just kind of interesting when you think about a person's legacy, impact, and how we perceive them.
Yeah. And you know, I have fourth graders that still will shoot paper balls in a recycling bin, and they still yell Kobe. And I'm like, you didn't even watch Kobe play. Like, how do you even know? And they're like, well, it's, you know, it's just a thing, and we know that's what it is. And so it'll be interesting to see how long that carries. Like, obviously, if we continue to have these kids get older, are the kids gonna really know Kobe, or are they just gonna know it because it's an internet thing now? You know, because it was even an internet thing before he passed away. Like, people were doing it. And I don't know if you saw the video outside Staples Center. There were a bunch of people. There was a garbage can in the middle, and it said, and someone had stuck a note on it, a big paper that said, "You know what to do." And they had like a bunch of loose leaf paper, and people were just shooting it. Now, they weren't yelling Kobe or anything, but like, it'd be interesting. Like, obviously, it affected the kids that are playing now, and, you know, affected LeBron, and we'll talk about that in a second. But like, it's just kind of, it'd be interesting to see if it carries on with the youth, because obviously, you know, I think a lot of these kids now, no one really, if I was to ask them, you know, who did Jordan hit the game winner? What team did Jordan hit the game winner in 97 against? I don't think that most kids nowadays are going to be able to tell me that. It would be my guess, right?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the further and further you get away from the end of somebody's career, the easier it becomes for us to forget them. Although I will say that because of the internet, because of YouTube, because of the fact that you can now go back and find games, it's way easier for people to at least be able to, someone like my age, it's much easier for me to say, hey, you want to know how good Jordan was? Let's go back and watch the flu game. Let's go back and watch him hit that game winner against Byron Russell. Let's go back and watch highlights of his 10 greatest dunks. Let's go back and watch this, watch that, whatever it might be. Kobe, let's go back and watch the 81-point game. Let's go back and watch his final game. Let's watch him win titles with Shaq. Let's watch him win in 2009 and 2010. You know, you can see that stuff, but the reality is that I think, and this is what it comes down to in a lot of cases, is I think you remember most the player, at least from, I would say, my generation, your generation. I think your favorite player, the players that you stick by, are the ones that you remember from your youth, because those are the ones that you look up to. Those are the ones that you try to emulate. Those are the ones whose things they've done are they're seared into your memory when you're a young kid. And I just don't think that by the time you become a 35 or a 40-year-old or a 50-year-old man or woman, you don't necessarily have the same connection with a player that you do when you're a kid. So I guess my point here is that kids are going to be on to the next new thing. So kids in my generation, it was Jordan, or it was Magic and Bird before that. And then it was Kobe. And now the generation of kids has been raised on LeBron. And at some point, there's going to be the next guy, whoever it is. Maybe it's going to be Luka. Maybe it's Giannis. Maybe it's a guy that's not even in the league yet. Who knows who's going to be the next cultural icon that people are going to gravitate towards. But all of this will live on much easier than the Will Chamberlains and the Bill Russells and even the Kareems and the guys from the late 70s back. So much of their stuff isn't out there, or it's hard to find, and there's sporadic clips. And so it's harder to understand and appreciate their greatness when you can't go back and see it. And so I think that's something that, you know, Kobe's entire career is going to be available to anybody who wants to see it. But I still think our culture just keeps moving on to the next thing. And that's not to say that people won't remember Kobe, because certainly they will, just like they'll remember every other great player. But there's always someone greater coming down along the pike. Or if not greater, there's always someone great ready to step into those shoes and fill that cultural icon status that these guys like Kobe and LeBron and Magic all were able to, and Jordan, were all able to get to.
Yep. All right. Anything else you have to say on Kobe?
Let's spend like 2 minutes just talking about Kobe the player, and then we'll move on to kind of LeBron getting the torch passed to him, and then we can talk some modern day NBA and pick the All-Star reserves. But Kobe as a player, I think the one thing that I've been thinking about is one of my longtime criticisms of LeBron was that in big moments, he didn't always take the shot, especially early in his career. And there was always that conversation of LeBron makes the right play and he passes to the open guy. And I guess I've always been of the mindset, at least in the most clutch of clutch moments, that a bad shot for the best player is a better shot than a good shot for the second best player or the third best player or the fourth best player. And so when I think about Kobe's mentality, that's one thing that I can completely relate to. And one of the things that I did like about him was he just said, look, I'm the best guy. I should have the ball in my hands. I should be the guy taking the shot. And I want my superstar to do that. And that's not to say that, you know, you have four guys on, you're going to shoot it no matter what. And Jordan obviously passed off in situations to Kerr and Paxson that led to the Bulls winning championships. But I can relate to the mentality. And that's the thing I think with Kobe that stands out. I know you put a little homage to Kobe and Alan Stein and the story that Alan loves to tell as part of his talks about just the maniacal work ethic and early morning workouts, and just the fact that Kobe, how much he's sweated the details on every little thing that he did. And I think that's the legacy that he's passed on. That's the legacy that when you see these current players talking about him and revering him, they're talking about a guy who had an insatiable desire to maximize his ability. And he just had a tremendous desire to prove that he could do it, that he was enough, that he was the best. And sometimes that was to his detriment, especially later in his career when maybe he wasn't as physically dominant as he was when he was younger. And clearly that need to be dominant caused the friction between he and Shaq. And if somehow those two guys could have dialed back their ego each 5 or 10% and stayed together, and not just stayed together being on the same team, but stayed together as a unified duo that both had the same mission, which just was to win titles. I mean, who knows how many more they could have won if they would have stuck together, physically stuck together, but more importantly, would have figured out a way to make it work between the two of them.
Did you watch any of the stuff on TNT tonight?
I didn't watch any of it. I just heard a little bit. I saw a little bit on Twitter, just that Shaq was really emotional and talking about it. And
he said that he joked with Kobe. He'd say, "I've got four, you've got four," or "I've got five, you've got four," or something like that between the two of them. And then they say, "If we would have stuck together, we would have won 10. Like, things like that. Like, obviously, we don't know what would have happened, but I mean,
they won three. They had one dominant run to the title where they went 15-1 in the playoffs. And the other two titles, Sacramento pushed them to 7. That was the game with the let's just call it the questionable officiating. And then they had the game with the famous lob pass.
Tim Donaghy reffing that game, Mike?
You know what? I don't think he was, but maybe he was in spirit. And then you had the other title run where they lost to beat the Blazers in 7, but they were down like 15 in the fourth quarter in that game. That's the game with the famous alley-oop from Kobe to Shaq, which might be both of their signature plays in the NBA, and that propelled them on to the title.
I think Kobe's signature play is that game overtime winner over Phoenix.
That could be. I mean, I think you probably go one of those two. Clearly that Phoenix shot more closely embodies what Kobe's career was. But I think that lob to Shaq sort of symbolizes the best of what those two guys could have been. And so I think you can clearly make an argument that either one of those is a great way to remember him. And, you know, he was a guy who wanted to be Jordan. I don't know. You saw that little Twitter video I sent out, right, that spliced the video between Kobe and LeBron. Did you see? Or Kobe and Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
And that was very cool. Just you could see the mannerisms and the technique. And basically one was a mirror image of the other. And I think Jordan's shadow, in my mind, you're climbing an impossible climb, but Kobe probably came as close to that as anybody could, being a similar type of player. LeBron is a completely different player than Jordan is. Kobe was a very, very similar player to what Michael was, and he didn't get there, but man, did he come close.
Yep. All right, let's transition to LeBron, because I think it's really, to make this even more bizarre, was the night before Kobe passes away, LeBron passes him for third all time. And, you know, that's kind of where I thought, oh, when I first saw the TMZ report, I was like, this can't be true. Like, they literally, last night, all they talked about was LeBron and Kobe, LeBron and Kobe. LeBron was asked after the game, all this other stuff. And it was just, it's why at first I really did a double take. I was like, that's something wacky is going on here. But to turn the focus on LeBron, obviously a monumental accomplishment for him to be third all time. My biggest takeaway when it happened, I texted you. I didn't know Karl Malone was second all time in scoring, and I don't know how I didn't know that. But the fact that he's second all time in scoring, he never won a ring. Oof.
All right. If it wasn't Karl Malone, were you thinking it was Jordan, or who were you thinking was?
I originally I kind of had forgotten LeBron had passed Jordan. I would have thought Jordan. That's who I would have thought in a second.
Okay.
But then I kind of, you got to remember he took those years off.
Right. Right.
You know, between his two retirements and then, you know.
Right. He missed he missed most of his second season with the broken foot. So. Yeah. So, yeah, he definitely.
But I mean, I would, I'll be honest, I was two at the time, right? Or one at the time.
For sure. You mean you weren't cataloging Jordan's seasons at that point?
No, but I would have never thought Karl Malone was two. I don't think Karl Malone's long to be two. I think there's a few people in the end. I don't know what Steph Curry's, like, long-term points total is going to be.
Yeah, but Malone's got But Malone played at such a high level for so long. Again, he had a 20-year career. in order to even get remotely close to this discussion, you have to be Jordan played, I think, 13 seasons, but again, he has the second highest scoring average in the history of the league. And
here's a question. Okay. Does James Harden have a chance to crack the top 10?
I have no idea where he is right now. The question with Harden again becomes how long is his career going to be? He started out slower than most of the guys at the top of the list. He also
he has 20,178 points as of now, Mike.
How old is he? You have his age in front. Is he 29 or 30?
Hold on. He is... Oh, man. He was born in 89. He's 30.
Okay, so he's 30 right now. When you think about the guys who are now in the top three or even the top four, if we include Kobe, Kareem, Karl Malone, LeBron, and Kobe are just physical marvels, guys who took tremendous care of their body, their conditioning, their physical tools. Not only were they blessed with great physical tools, but they maximized and took care of those physical tools. Like, I think of Kareem, and by the end of his career, he was doing yoga and all these different things to keep his body healthy. And clearly that was a different time in terms of training methods. But for Kareem to be able to play as long as he did, unbelievable. Karl Malone, all you had to do was look at a picture of him and understand that that guy took care of himself, was fanatical about his body. We all know about LeBron. Kobe played 20 years, and granted, at the end, after he tore his Achilles, he was compromised, but still, he played at a very, very high level for a very long time. James Harden does not strike me as having the same level of dedication to physical conditioning as these other guys. That's not to say he's in bad shape. There's no way he can be doing what he's doing and be in poor condition. But
he's in 47th right now all time, Mike, just put in perspective for you.
Yeah,
just,
I understand. Look, could he get there? Sure, but it takes more than just being a great scorer. It takes the physical longevity in order to be able to do that. And there are very few guys who combine the peak ability, you know, the peak seasons with the seasons of longevity that are required in order to get to the very, very top of that scoring list. And I would be very, very surprised if James Harden ends up there just because I don't think his body's going to make it.
I'm looking at the top, 20 list. There's only one guy on this list, Mike. I'm like, I know nothing about him.
Okay. Let me guess. It's on the top 20. Alex English?
No. He's 23rd.
Okay.
He would have been on my list.
I have no idea who you're thinking.
Dan Issel
played for the Nuggets, but he started in the ABA. He went to Kentucky, and he was probably about 6'9", old-fashioned center.
He averaged 22.6 points per game.
And he probably
played... His career.
Yeah, he had a long career. I don't know if you have his career numbers right there in front of you.
15 years.
Yeah, so... Again,
1,218 games. It looks like he didn't have a season, Mike, that in his 12 years that he played less than 77 games.
See, that helps too. Being durable and not missing games with the current trend toward load management. I just don't know if guys are going to play enough over the course of their careers to be able to approach this record, especially if the league, at some point, you got to think they're going to cut down the number of games. I don't know when that's going to happen. It may not be for 10 years, but at some point, you got to think that they're going to decrease the amount of games, especially if guys are just sitting out all the time. So I would be very dubious that Harden's going to make it. And I think it's going to get harder and harder for guys to get into that upper echelon of that all-time scoring list, kind of like you think about baseball and innings pitched or career wins, and those lists are basically at this point unassailable just because of the way the game has changed. And I think the NBA may be headed toward that same result.
Well, just bang some trash cans. People hit home runs.
We'll leave that
alone. I had to throw the Astros shade.
Did they hire Dusty Baker today?
No, it's the rumor. It's the rumor.
Okay. All right.
Okay. I have one more thing in relation to LeBron and Kobe.
Okay.
I'm going to have, I did this game myself. There was a, I found it online. I want you to name, you know, we did this with LeBron and MJ, who played with both players. There's way more to choose from that played on both a team with LeBron and a team with Kobe. I was able to come up with five there. Now, there are 15 answers. I was able to come up with one third of the answers. So let's see how many you can come up with, Mike. And like, we'll, I'll give you 30 seconds.
Okay. Smush Parker. Are you telling me yes or no?
I'll tell you that's no.
That's a no. Okay. Man, I'm gonna look bad on this one because let me think.
There's the obvious one, Mike. The best player Kobe ever played with.
Oh yeah, Shaq was together with Shaq played with LeBron. Man, gotta go through the. I'm trying to go through the Rolodex of guys. Oh man, I don't know. I have no idea.
Okay, here's the list. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Here's the ones that I got. I got Shaq. Okay. I got Jason Capono. Come on, Mike.
Okay.
Capono.
Go for it.
I got Clarkson and Nance. I knew those two. Those were easy. Okay. The other one that I got, Mike, was Ira Neubel.
Okay.
Because I remember he played for the Lakers for 1 year.
All right.
Okay. Here are the other players. Carlos Boozer, Antoine Jameson, Chris Mim.
I see. But I was just talking with somebody about Chris Mim today because Mim was the
Kobe Carl. Don't know who that is.
That's George Carl's son.
Oh, didn't know that. Shannon Brown, should have known that one.
Okay, yeah, that's a knowable one.
This guy I'd never heard of before, Jelani McCoy.
Jelani McCoy, he's from UCLA.
Okay.
Center.
I don't remember Roddy Turioff playing with LeBron, but it had to be when he was with the Heat, right?
Must have been, because he was Roddy Turioff was never here in Cleveland.
Yep. Okay, Joe Smith, that one makes sense.
Yeah.
And Trey Johnson. And then the other one that happened only this year, Dwight Howard. Because when Dwight Howard was on the Lakers in the first iteration.
Oh, okay. As you're saying that, I'm like, when did LeBron play with Dwight Howard?
Right now, Mike.
Right, I understand. But that in my head I was going, "When? I don't think he ever did."
So it's got some I mean, let's be honest, the average base basketball fan isn't going to remember that Jason Capono played with LeBron and
probably not. That's a fun.
I only remembered that one because I liked Capono a lot because he shared names with me.
He was a good shooter. Capono was a good shooter.
He was ahead of his time, Mike.
He was. There's definitely some guys that you look back in previous eras that could have definitely been three-point specialists, would have been a lot more valuable in today's game than they were back in the other game. That would be an interesting game to play is this guy better in this era, or would he have been better in the past?
All right, that's a future episode, Mike.
That could be a future game show, Hoopheads Pod game show.
All right. Okay, so now anything else on LeBron, or are we ready to...
No, let's go on. Let's move on.
Okay, so All-Stars. So the All-Star selections now, is the draft happening this week? Was that the original
No,
plan?
I think they're... My understanding was that... So we're recording this on Tuesday night, that... Thursday is when the All-Star reserves are going to be announced, and then I don't know.
The following week they're going to draft them.
I would guess. I mean, I would think the draft is going to be much closer to the actual game than we are now. So I think they're
only three weeks from the game. 2 weeks from the
right,
game,
but
right?
I'm saying I don't. I think they're going to do it a couple days before the game. They're not going to do it way in advance. So my understanding is that the reserves are going to be out Thursday.
Okay. Well, cool. So that means next week's episode we're going to draft the teams, right?
Correct. I would think so. Yes.
Okay. All right, so we'll just do this. I'll let you. Do you want to do the East or the West first, Mike?
Let's do the East. So I'll read the East starters, and then we'll let you name your reserves, and then I'll name my reserves. How's that
okay,
sound?
Okay, go ahead.
All right, so the starters in the East: Giannis, no brainer. Embiid, no brainer. Kemba, no brainer. I think the last two were up for grabs, and then one questionable selection here. Pascal Siakam, probably deserving. I could make a case for somebody else, but I'm okay with Siakam in there.
I had him on my list, Mike.
Well, I had him on my list. He would have made the team, but I don't know that necessarily.
No, I had him in a starter.
I know. We talked about this last week. I would not have started Siakam. And then number five, Trae Young, which
I almost, when I texted you Trae Young, I literally almost fell out of my chair when I saw that.
I mean, Trae Young's stats, if you just read his stat line, you'd be like, all right, this guy definitely is an all-star. It's a no-brainer all-star selection. And I do think that within the confines of the all-star game, he's a guy who's going to be fun to have there because he's a great passer. He's going to shoot long-distance threes, which seems to be what everybody wants to do in the all-star game now. But as far as being a deserving starter, I mean, when you look at some of these other names that we're going to mention here in the reserves, I don't know that I can justify Trae Young on one of the three worst teams in the league being an all-star starter. It seems like basically Atlanta has force-fed him or allowed him to just kind of go and put up stats. And not that he's not amazing. I mean, he shoots from long distance, and like I said, he's really a great passer, but he's a complete zero on the other end of the floor, and I know that doesn't matter in the All-Star game, which is why, again, he's going to be fun. But, you know, that's the way it goes. So, all right, give me your All-Star reserves.
Okay, so here are my reserves. I have Jimmy Butler. I think that's a no-brainer, right?
Yep, I got Butler.
Ben Simmons,
yes,
no-brainer.
Simmons is a no-brainer.
Jason Tatum, no-brainer.
I do not have Tatum on my team.
Oh, man. Okay. I have Kyle Lowry.
I have Lowry. He was my last guy in.
Okay. I have Sabonis.
I have Sabonis.
Okay. Here's the two that could be questionable, in my opinion.
Okay.
I thought those five were locks. They were literally the first five I wrote down. So.
All right. Okay.
And this guy torched the Cavs the other day. I have Zach LaVine. Mike, he's averaged 29 points a game since the middle of December. So I'm rewarding that. I know Chicago's a terrible team. I'm rewarding it.
You know what? If I were you, I would just take Kemba. Sit Kemba down. Let's just have a Zach LaVine, Trae Young backcourt. Let's not guard anyone. I mean, it's the All-Star.
And then my last
game.
Let's not guard Bradley Beal.
Let's not guard anybody.
And Bradley Beal.
Bradley Beal, you love losing teams, man. Holy cow. You can't get any Cavs on there?
No.
Colin Sexton?
No, Darius Garland needs a rest because he's a rookie and he's tired.
You don't want to see Darius Garland miss more floaters?
Hey, he played good yesterday.
By the way, Porter's going to be the best one of those guys by far.
For sure. I mean, I don't know how much of the game you watched tonight. Oh, holy mackerel.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, he's still figuring it out, but he's going to be the best of those three by far.
You know what, Mike? He's got a little James Harden in him.
He likes to shoot. I'll give you that. I was telling my daughter Meredith, who loves Jordan Clarkson, I'm like, he might be the next Jordan Clarkson. He loves to shoot.
He's a lefty, and he does that little step back thing.
He does. He's going to be good. I think he's going to be solid. All right, so I have, as the guys that you did not mention, so rather than, I guess, I don't know, so I'm just going to go with the three guys I have. So Chris Middleton, the Bucks have to have two guys. Middleton is averaging, I think, I should have pulled up his stats before we started talking, but he's averaging almost 20 a game. He had 51 tonight. He's the second best player on a team that right now is 41-6. And I just think that
Chris Middleton off the team, how many less games have they won?
I think they win less than what you think. I mean, I think he has more of an impact than what you think because, like I said, I'm still not convinced that he's the greatest number two guy. And if you look at recent title teams, you can argue that he might be one of the worst number twos. But I'm going to give you his stats. He's averaging 19 a game in only 20, first of all, in 28 minutes, 4 assists, 6 rebounds. Again, this is in 28 minutes. He's shooting 50% from the field. He's shooting 42% from three. He's got good stats on a team that's 41-6. So I got Middleton in there. I have Bam Adebayo in because I just think that
he was my first one out, Mike.
Defensively, he's been great. He's improved tremendously as a playmaker. I think Miami, I know you had him at number two in the East going into the season, but I think they've quite honestly outperformed, and I think that Adebayo's ascension has been a key part of that. And then my last guy I had in is Malcolm Brogdon. And the reason why I put Brogdon in there is when you think that, I know Sabonis has been good, and so the Pacers already have an all-star representative, and Sabonis is clearly deserving. But I think that when you look at the fact that the Pacers, by the way, Oladipo is due back Wednesday. I don't know if you saw that. So he's coming back.
I did not see that.
So he's coming back tomorrow. He's going to play. He's going to play tomorrow night. But the fact that Brogdon was instrumental, especially right out of the gate, he's tailed off a little bit, but right out of the gate, he was kind of carrying them. And I just think that needs to be rewarded. When you have a team that's missing their best player that currently is sitting fourth in the at the top of the conference in the East, I just rewarded Brogdon. So
okay,
there you could definitely split hairs with some of those guys at the end. You could make an argument. To me, Brogdon and Lowry were the two that if you wanted to tell me you wanted Tatum in or you wanted Jaylen Brown in, I could live with that.
Okay.
I don't want Bradley Beal in though. No offense.
Okay. So the Western Conference starters, LeBron, Anthony Davis, Kawhi, the Beard, and Hallaluka. So Mike, why don't you list off your reserves and
okay. So I have Nikola Jokic.
Got him.
That's a no-brainer. I have Rudy Gobert.
Got him.
I think that's a no-brainer. Donovan Mitchell.
Got him.
Damian Lillard.
Got him.
Brandon Ingram.
Oh, my gosh. 5 for 5.
Chris Paul.
Oh, my gosh, Mike. Give it to me again. I got 6.
Okay.
We're 6 for 6.
All right, so the last one was the toughest.
I agree.
And I think the guys that we've already mentioned – I think you would be hard-pressed to argue against any of them. So if you wanted to put somebody else in, I think you'd have a really, really hard time convincing me that one of those guys should be out. And okay. Now this last spot, I think you could – there's a lot of different directions that you could have gone with this. And what I tried to do is I looked at all the candidates is I just said – which guy is the best player? If I just in a vacuum, all things being equal,
we're not going to agree on this one.
Which guy's the best player? I had Devin Booker.
Oh my God, I have Devin Booker. I definitely didn't think you were going there. We were simpatico, Mike.
How about that? 7 for 7. How about that? I think the last spot. You look at Karl Anthony Towns' stats.
Ugh,
but. Statistically, I look at him in a lot like I look at Trae Young. Like I'm just not sure. And maybe Minnesota's situation, players, team is just so bad around him that he can't elevate them. But to me, that's an indictment on him that he can't elevate them in any way. And he's been a clear minus throughout his career on defense. And so I don't know. I don't think he has a case. And to me, there really isn't anybody else that sticks out as
one that I would even make, if he wouldn't have been out, that Paul George would have been the guy, but he's been out so much at this point. Like I can't consciously say he deserves it. And like, I was trying to go through the other teams.
And even Paul George's stats are not, you know what I mean? Even his stats are not overwhelming. So it's not like, yeah, he's missed a lot of games and he's like overwhelmingly better than everybody else. I don't think there's really, I don't know. He doesn't have a big enough statistical case to be able to, you know, to be able to overcome that.
And here we go. Here we got Memphis, who's in the 8th spot right now. They don't have an all-star.
And could you, let's put it this way. If we're putting Trae Young in for the excitement that he could bring to the game,
Josh should be in, right?
Then, like I looked at Morant and thought, you know, he'd be fun to have in the game, but you look at what Booker does. I don't think he can put Morant in over Booker, and then you've got the guy who is always in the All-Star game and plays harder than anybody else in the All-Star game who's not there, not going to be there this year, Russell Westbrook. Now, you can laugh all you want, but let me pull up Russ's stats here. Let me see where he's at.
I got it.
You got it?
Minus. He's averaging 26 points a game, 8.1 rebounds, 7.4 assists. He's shooting 45% from the field. He's shooting 23% from behind the arc. And he's shooting 78% from the line.
All right, well, okay. So will you be stunned if Russell Westbrook's on the team?
I won't be because you know what? The other one, Mike, and you're going to laugh at this one. Would I be stunned if Carmelo is somehow on the team?
No. Yeah, I would be stunned if Carmelo makes it. I would be.
He was. Do you see the player vote? The player vote from the All-Star game.
The players don't. They don't know what they're doing.
He was sixth. He was sixth in the front court.
But I read, I don't know, yeah, the player vote's a joke, though. You look at some of the people who get votes in that, and you can't take the player vote seriously. There's just no way to you could take it seriously. Either of the Spurs guys, Aldridge or DeRozan, did you look at them at all?
No, I didn't
really either. I looked at your boy SGA, but I don't think you can take him over Chris Paul, and I don't think Oklahoma City needs two All-Stars. So, again, Booker's the one that you might be able to look for an alternative. You just look at Chris Paul needs to get a better picture.
He needs to get a better picture on the NBA app, Mike.
All right, well, I can't play on that one, but nonetheless, you just look at Russ's counting stats, and you know, you just look at his stats and you'd be like, oh, this guy's in. And you take away the importance of the 3-point shot. And I mean, has there ever, let's put it this way, I would defy you to find a 26-8-7 stat line from a guy who's a perennial All-Star who then doesn't make the team in the year that that's his stat line.
Yep.
I would venture to say that's probably never happened.
You're probably true.
But the way the game has changed and the evolution of the game and the importance of the three, I don't think you can – plus the fact that the Rockets are kind of struggling and not playing that well, I think is going to leave Russ on the outside looking in. But like I said, I won't be surprised. I will not be surprised at all if come Thursday when the announcements are made that he's on the team. Wouldn't shock me at all.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, no trade news. Nothing really happened on the trade front. Dallas picked up Willie Cauley-Stein. Other than that, there really hasn't been much going on. So, yep. I don't know.
We got one week.
Yeah, hopefully that's going to pick up a little bit and we'll get some movement. Hopefully the Cavs will be active and get some things done, get some more draft picks in here. So hopefully we can figure out a way to rebuild that team and get them out of the basement and find the next transcendent superstar. Good luck with that, Kobe Altman.
Good luck, man.
All right, Jay, anything else?
I got nothing, man.
All right, well.
Go watch the highlight I sent you of Bronny James throwing down an alley-oop off an inbounds play. Pretty good.
All right, I'll definitely do that. Before we sign off, once again, rest in peace, Kobe Bryant, and our thoughts and prayers go out to the families of the people who were affected and involved in that tragedy. And, again, to say it was a sad day, and it's going to continue to have an impact for a long, long time on the NBA and the players that are involved and obviously the families that are involved in the tragedy. So our thoughts and prayers go out to everybody that was affected by that.
I agree.
All right. Thanks to everyone out there for listening. We appreciate it, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. Coaches, check out these new offerings from Tyler Whitcomb Basketball Coaching Courses. The Brad Brownell Clemson Playbook and Baker Dunleavy Quinnipiac Playbook are now available. These two coaches are among the most respected tacticians in the country. Visit coachtube.com/users/Tyler Whitcomb to check out these great resources.
Head Start Basketball, along with members of the J. Billis Skills Camp staff, will be hosting the very first Prime Skills Camp, an affiliate of the J. Billis Skills Camp that is held annually in Charlotte, North Carolina. Prime Skills Camp will take place on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, June 26th through the 28th, and will be designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9. Prime Skills Camp will mirror the J. Billis Skills Camp in daily programming, teaching, coach-to-camper ratio, and quality of instruction. Prime Skills Camp brings all of the team-oriented individual instruction, focus on the fundamentals, and high-level coaching to young men aspiring to a high school varsity basketball experience. This camp is operated by Billis Camp veterans and includes the J. Billis Coaches Development Program alongside the camp, ensuring that the quality of teaching and coaching at this camp is second to none. Please visit headstartbasketball.com or jbilliscamp.com for more information or to get registered.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.